December, when most Minnesotans were fixated on the arrival of the year 2000. The Minnesota Department of Public Safety report shows the imprisonment ratio between blacks and whites has grown to canyon-sized proportions. Tom Johnson was a member of the committee which prepared the report.
Our ratio is 25 to 1. The national average is about 7.5. And that is simply an unacceptable fact, and it's a fact that is the precipitating reason behind our study.
Former Hennepin County Attorney Tom Johnson directs the Council on Crime and Justice, a Minneapolis-based study group. He says the numbers show that many more black men than white men are arrested and eventually put in prison. What his organization wants to find out, Johnson says, is if racism plays a role in what happens to black men at stops along the way in the criminal justice system.
What's happening with the decisions that are being made by the police in terms of whether to release someone or not release them, whether to bring a case to the city or county attorney's office, and once it gets to the city or county attorney, whether to charge or not to charge, and what's happening when cases are getting dismissed prior to sentencing. We know very little about that.
Minnesota's ratio of 25 black men imprisoned for every white man is so dramatic, the obvious reaction is it's a statistical fluke. The number is from 1997 figures gathered by the Federal Bureau of Justice Statistics. The ratio measures the rate at which black men and white men are sent to prison in the state. The number must be viewed in context. Minnesota has one of the smallest prison populations in the country, under 6,000 adults. Even so, the high black imprisonment rate pulses like a warning light, because the number of black men in Minnesota is also very small. They're about 1.5% of the population. Minnesota Department of Corrections Commissioner Cheryl Ramstead Voss.
There are a lot of children who are without fathers to be able to participate in their lives, to help them. I think we see, looking at the research, that if a young person's parent is in prison, the likelihood of their ending up in prison is substantially increased. So from society's standpoint, I think those are reasons enough to want to examine the system to see if there's something that's contributing to this imbalance.
A predictable reaction to the disproportionate number of black men behind bars is they committed the crime. They should do the time. But are black men put in prison at a higher rate because, in fact, they commit more crime than white men, or because the system is racist?
My own belief, after looking at it, and there's not been enough study on this, my own belief is that it's both.
University of Minnesota law professor John Powell directs the law school's Race and Poverty Center. He says black men commit violent crime at a higher rate than white men. But rates of drug use between blacks and whites are about the same. Why, then, are blacks arrested, charged, and convicted at much higher rates for drug use than whites? Powell says blaming poverty, dropping out of school, and other causes doesn't account for the disparity.
If you try to explain everything, try to explain in terms of poverty, in terms of criminal activity, in terms of education, when you finish all that, there's still an amount that's unexplained that might or must be, if you're in the strong sense, or might be in the weak sense, racial bias.
Minnesota Public Radio's Elizabeth Stawicki is here with details. Elizabeth?
The report says while there are examples of overt racism, the major problems are subtly embedded in institutional practices and procedures.
News of Minnesota's higher imprisonment rate for blacks broke 7 years ago. The ratio was 16 to 1 then. Justice Alan Page was part of the Minnesota Supreme Court Task Force on Race Bias, which found harsher treatment for black people, or more lenient treatment for whites, was common.
We found that people of color are incarcerated more often. They are given longer sentences. They receive higher bails. They are subject to less favorable plea bargains. And on and on and on.
Page and the task force found white crime suspects were more likely to receive a summons to appear in court. Blacks were more often arrested and held in jail. When sentenced, whites were more likely to be fined, blacks more likely to serve time. Page says the 1993 findings need to be backed up with better numbers before anyone can weigh in with prescriptions for how people in the criminal justice system need to change their behavior.
We can work to change people's hearts, or we can work to change people's conduct. I'm one of those that their hearts want to come along, that's fine, but I want to change the conduct. That's what's important to me.
The racial imbalance in Minnesota's criminal justice system is apparent from the start. The pie chart on Lieutenant Rob Allen's computer screen at his 3rd Precinct Police Office on Lake Street in South Minneapolis tells the story. It shows bright green, blue, and red slices for 1998 crimes, the most recent year for which complete numbers are available.
20% of the suspects in crimes that are reported to us are white, and something like 66% are black. When we actually make arrests in those same categories of crimes, about 55% for those felony crimes are black.
The numbers, Allen says, must be viewed with caution. They do not mean that 66% of black men in Minneapolis are lawbreakers. Many of the suspects are the same person. A relative handful of people, black and white, Allen says, commit most of the crime in the city. The city's policing strategy, called Code 4, directs extra patrols to high crime areas. Once there, officers stop people guilty of minor infractions so police can check their identity to see if they're wanted as suspects in other crimes.
I think we do aggressive policing in areas where there is high crime, and we target our resources there. I think that people who commit crimes, jaywalking is a crime, traffic offenses are crimes, are apt to be stopped by the police.
Critics say the Code 4 strategy creates the air of an army of occupation in poor neighborhoods. They argue it targets poor people generally, black men specifically, by saturating neighborhoods where they live with police officers ready to pounce on anyone. Defenders, including police officials, say Code 4 policing catches criminals and point to Minneapolis's 2-year double-digit drop in crime as proof. Minnesota is hardly alone in its disproportionate imprisonment rate for black men. Wisconsin and Iowa also have high rates. The national imprisonment rate of black men has leapt forward due in part to our 25-year-long war on crime. Federal and state prison populations have grown tenfold from the mid-1970s. Black men account for about half of federal and state prison admissions, even though they're only about 7% of the country's population. Mark Maurer, a researcher for the Sentencing Project, a Washington, D.C.-based advocacy group, says our imprisonment rate is without precedent.
Our rate of incarceration internationally is second only to Russia. We lock our citizens up at a rate 5 to 10 times the rate of other industrialized nations. And so we've really expanded the use of imprisonment in ways that have never been done before in any democratic society.
In neighborhoods, the war on crime is often played out with raids on crack houses, traffic stops, and other roundups. Calls for a crackdown on crime are loudest from residents in poor neighborhoods. People in Minneapolis raised a clamor when the city's 1995 murder rate, 97 killings, set a record. More than half of the murders were tied to gang rivalries over drug dealing. Since then, Minneapolis's homicide rate has dropped by nearly half. Still, the Twin Cities drug trade is flourishing. St. Paul Police Chief William Finney says one reason more black men than white men end up in the criminal justice system is the way drugs are sold. Many powder cocaine users, Finney says, are white and confine their dealing and use to homes and offices. Many crack users and sellers, he says, are black men who do business on the street.
Police departments are uniquely set up to deal with crime that is witnessed by the police officer, and that we are a reactive institution. We are not very proactive in that. We are not set up to be deep investigatory agencies. It's not to say that African Americans are the only consumers of illegal drugs. It's just that we go in a very, very visible fashion to purchase those drugs, whereas other communities may do that behind closed doors or in a surreptitious manner, more surreptitious manner.
Longer prison sentences for drug dealing have put a disproportionate number of black men behind bars. Federal sentences for crack dealers are longer than prison time for powder cocaine pushers. Minnesota's crack and cocaine sentencing discrepancy was ruled unconstitutional, so lawmakers increased the cocaine sentence. They didn't stop there. Tom Johnson says in 1989, Minnesota lawmakers doubled sentences for violent crimes.
Minnesota now has, for violent offenses, some of the longest sentences in the country. And so what we're seeing now is an increasing prison population, not due much at all to an increase in the number of people coming to the front gates of the prison, but rather to the fact that people who do come are staying for longer periods of time.
Nearly two-thirds of the people who came before Hennepin County Drug Court Judge Kevin Burke last year were black. Burke says black men with poor education, no job, no money, selling drugs in neighborhoods saturated with police patrols, are destined to be overrepresented in prison. But racism, Burke says, is also a factor.
Minnesota as a state is unfortunately captured in its past. Senator Humphrey fought for civil rights, therefore this state is a very liberal state when it comes to civil rights, and in fact we're not any different than a lot of other places. Racism occurs in Minnesota courts, and the first part of recovery is admitting you have a problem. And so it seems to me that we would be far healthier to just say, yes, there is no question there is racism in society, there's institutional racism in systems like the criminal justice system, and by admitting that, we will be in a better position to recover.
The reaction of residents in Minneapolis's Longfellow neighborhood to the high imprisonment rate for black men in Minnesota ranges from surprise to a wish that more perpetrators, regardless of color, would be put behind bars. The members of the group, all of them white, are spending a weekday evening at a regular community crime prevention meeting at a neighborhood park building. Longfellow's population is diverse. The neighborhood's crime rate is relatively low.
I'm a little bit alarmed that the ratio is so high, 25 to 1. You know, we probably need to focus on ways to make it better, to make the system perhaps more just. I mean, if it's an indication that it is unjust.
It does seem a bit odd, a bit off, because you would think the ratio, the prison ratio, would reflect the population ratio.
They are coming here because the benefits are better here, I would say. And I think that's a known fact. So why are they coming here? Not to work, probably, but they do have to, you know, come here for crime.
I would like to see the ratio change, not by letting black people out, but putting more white people away that are not going to jail when I think they should.
The reaction of black men behind bars to the huge disparity in the imprisonment ratio between whites and blacks runs the gamut. Visitors to Lino Lake State Prison, just north of the Twin Cities, pass through metal, elevator-like doors to enter the fenced-in collection of one-story buildings that are connected with walkways and courtyards. A dozen and a half black men wearing blue jeans, work shirts, and running shoes meet once a week with Gregory McMoore, who works for Amicus, a Minneapolis-based private nonprofit prison counseling program. Most of the men will be released soon, and McMoore is trying to help them prepare for life on the outside. A fan stirs the warm, stuffy air in the meeting room.
You have laws, you have policies, you have different other legislative things that's involved in the whole process of what's responsible for the disparity rate in Minnesota. You have different stigmas that's attached to people that immigrate here from other states into Minnesota. So you have a lot of different elements that contribute to the whole overall situation. But I think the major influence that's responsible for the disparity rate in Minnesota is white supremacy.
Not only racism, it's the fact that most of the kids today believe in the way to graduate to manhood is come to prison. I've been watching people come to prison for 40 years almost. My family started years ago, back in the 70s, when my mother was taking food up to the prisoners in St. Cloud. And the door keeps revolving. We get out, we come back, we get out, we come back. There's nothing that's ever been there to help once we stepped out into the system. It's a setup.
For me, I was in college and everything, and I left all that for the glamour. I wanted to get it fast. And you know what? I didn't learn it like that. My daddy didn't teach me like that. He taught me you go to work, you take care of your family. But I wanted a fast track of it, and that's why I ended up here. So it's not about all about our parents' things of that nature. I believe it. we as black men, I don't care, you can put racism and call it whatever you want to, but I believe we as black men have abandoned our families. That's why our sons end up back here. And when they look outside their door, they don't see brothers going to work. They don't see them carrying briefcases. They don't see them carrying bins. You know what? They see them with beepers. They see that's the format that they see. They have no mentors in their life. They have nobody to stand there and say, this is the way you need to do this, son. This is the way you need to do this. And they have nobody to ask questions to because we're not there, because we're here.
The conversation swirls around the room. The men direct their anger at racism and unfair treatment by police. They talk about the disappointment with their own behavior. They blame their lot in life on growing up in violent neighborhoods or living with addicted parents. But they also blame themselves for bad decisions made about how to live their own lives. The meeting ends with handshakes all around as the men return to their rooms and prepare for lights out. Amicus counselor Gregory McMoore says racism is one of the reasons there's an imbalance between black men and white men sent to prison in Minnesota. However, he says attitude, a swagger, a way of dress or talking, are signs some black men carry what he calls HIV, hood infectious virus, a diagnosis McMoore says means some of the men are headed for trouble.
And for anybody who grew up in urban America, you know what that means. It means a lifestyle, it means a demeanor, it means the way that some people feel that they have to live their lives. Unfortunately, HIV equals AIDS, which means addiction, incarceration, or death.
McMoore doesn't let white people off the hook in his analysis of the 25-to-1 black-to-white imprisonment ratio. To make it outside the prison walls, McMoore says, black men need to change their lives, and white people need to accept them.
98% of the people who are incarcerated are coming out again. And one wants to believe that they're going to come out in a better frame of mind than when they went in. People don't feel good about themselves when they're undereducated, underemployed, when they're trying to make a go of it, and they're coming up against a system or a society that doesn't, that makes it more difficult for people to be successful simply because of their culture, of the color of their skin, rather than maybe celebrating our diversity and looking at it as an asset and building on it.
Corrections Commissioner Shell Ramstead Voss says white Minnesotans need to examine their behavior to see if it's part of the problem.
I have children who are of a different race, so my daughter was in preschool as a three-year-old. She was being taunted by some of the other preschoolers, and so I've had to deal with it very up close and personally, and have been hurt by some of the same things that I think do exist, but it's not going to be easy to get to the root of this problem. It's going to take time. It's going to take a lot of thoughtful people who are willing to look first at themselves and then at the system and be very brutally honest about where the problems are coming from.
Hennepin County Judge Kevin Burke is more direct in his warning. He says white people are ignoring society's race problems. Relying on police and prisons to deal with the symptoms, Burke says, creates conditions which threaten the country's future.
Over time, we will end up in a huge crisis of race relations between the communities of color. There are way too many young kids, young African-American kids, who have no trust whatsoever in the criminal justice system. And over time, that's bad. That's real bad. You can't end up having, as one police chief I remember and admired a lot saying, you can't end up having the police be an occupational army in communities of color and not understand that you're going to really have a problem in the long run.
Hennepin County Judge Kevin Burke. Results from the Council on Crime and Justice study of racism in Minnesota's criminal justice system are expected this fall. Dan Olson, Minnesota Public Radio.